You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Josh Nelson talks film with us every Friday, filmology.com and at Filmology on Twitter. Josh, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Let's go weird first.
Yes.
Wolfpack, crazy documentary. We'll play a little bit of the trailer in a moment, but tell people, I don't know how to describe this film.
So this is a documentary about a family of nine living in New York, Manhattan, Lower East Side, all living in the same small apartment. You've got a father from South America, the mother from the American Midwest, and their seven children. And what makes this family unique, apart from the size and where they're living, is they've spent most of their lives, particularly the children, living in this apartment. They're homeschooled.
Tiny apartment.
Sometimes, as one of the children confesses, we didn't even leave the apartment in that year.
For a year.
But what, beyond just that fact alone, makes this family curious is that they have a strange obsession with cinema and film history. And they seem to spend most of their days either watching films, transcribing films, or reenacting their favourite scenes from films like Reservoir Dogs in a manner that recalls the Michel Gondry film Be Kind, Rewind. These are the kids who've been Swedeing before they even knew that Swedeing was a thing.
Yeah. It's odd. The other thing, which I'd love to get into at some stage, they make these amazing costumes out of, like, what they say are yoga mats and cardboard boxes, but he really looks like Batman in Dark Knight. Like, that's what's really strange. They're incredibly talented. However, let's have a little listen to a bit of the trailer.
I always, like, metaphorically described our childhood as, like, him being the landowner and us the people who work on the land.
My parents didn't encourage us to communicate with society, so we were kind of shut off. Always lived in this apartment.
In the summer, there was more chance of us getting out. Sometimes we go out once a year.
This is like 3D, man.
It's very fresh out here.
And at one particular year, we never got out at all.
So this is genuinely strange. This Peruvian father never lets them out. And the director bumped into them on one of their first big outings. So you're watching them basically encounter the world for the first time, aren't you?
You are. Look, I think this is one of those strange films that for me was a little frustrating, because this type of subject really only comes along once in a lifetime for a documentary filmmaker. And I feel like the subjects are a goldmine of material, but I don't think the documentary is.
Don't you?
I actually felt quite frustrated by the experience of this documentary, because it leaves open so many threads and never really explores the threads that or the issues that it invites, yes, or that the participants invite, even to the point where we don't even know, in the context of the documentary, how this filmmaker has gotten inside.
But does that matter? Because I must admit, I was very frustrated. I'm in this luxurious position of asking the director, and the first thing I said was, wow, there's so many questions to be answered. And she looked at me strangely as though, what do you mean? So, which was a bit... So I get that frustration. However, it's such a unique experience to watch people who've lived such a cloistered life and see them. I mean, they're clearly seething with hatred for their father. Whether it's abuse or neglect is never made clear. And you're right, there's lots of unanswered questions. It's still an extraordinary window on something bizarre and terrible that's happened to this family. So, I mean, for that alone, I mean, I very much felt like it was worth watching, even though it's frustrating.
Yeah, look, I definitely think it's worth watching.
Yeah.
For me, the resounding thought that I've had since watching this film is, I wish the documentary had been stronger. I wish this subject had a better film to do their story justice, because I feel like we get glimmers of the surface, we get various anecdotes about the children, but all the really interesting stuff, and there's a lot of interesting material that's raised in this film, sort of never really get our teeth into, if I use the Wolfpack kind of analogy, that, you know, there's the question of why they're watching the films. Why, given how abusive the father is, have charges not been brought against him? Why is it that, on the one hand, they resent their father and they rail against him, but still demand to stay within the apartment? There's, you know, there's so many interesting things. I mean, the reason the father, who we hear is a sort of a tyrant, why has he let this documentary filmmaker into their apartment in the first place? There's just so many unanswered questions that I felt was ripe for mining in a documentary sense that we don't really get a handle on. And the structure doesn't really have a taut or typical dramatic structure. It feels a little bit like maybe we could have been building to this idea of are they going to get out, and what are the significance of that? But we don't really have that in this documentary. So, look, I think it's a curiosity. I think it's interesting. I think the subjects themselves sustain the viewing experience for a lot of the running time. But
you wanted a lot more, didn't you?
I did want a lot more, yeah.
Okay. Look, 1300-222-774, I'd love it. I know because this film was on at the festival, I know that quite a few of you have seen it. But what I'd really like to know is strangest family in a film, because this is a hands down, by a country mile, the weirdest portrayal of a family I have ever seen on screen. However, you may have your own. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. Any film with a weird family in it that just you were kind of thinking, whoa, what's going on here? Love to hear from you. 1300-222-774 is the phone number. You can use the text as well, of course. 0437-774-774. Let me try something on you.
Okay.
Let me get all film school-y on you.
Yeah, go for it.
Maybe the virtue of the film is that your lack of access to information, your inability to make sense of the world, perfectly mirrors the experience they had growing up. They're clearly intrigued by the movies and by the world. They have a whole lot of questions that are never answered. They have a whole lot of boundaries put around everything that they see that are completely intolerable to them. It perfectly mirrors their experience while you're learning about theirs.
Yeah, I was pondering this and my response to the film in that context yesterday. And I think we need a little bit more information to formulate. I mean, I think ambiguity is fine, and the film does have ambiguity in it. But if it's not intentional ambiguity, if it's not a case of providing both sides of an argument and saying, well, I'm going to leave it up to the audience to form their own judgment on this family. And I think one really interesting aspect where the filmmaker could have pursued that was in relation to this idea that the father has imprisoned his children because of the violent outside, the scary New York City that lies outside, and yet their lives inside the apartment seem completely taken with violent cinema.
I mean, yeah, well, that is going on as well.
So that, I thought, was something that they could have explored or at least presented a kind of a, you know, why.
Yeah.
Explain to me your fascination with violent cinema. Doesn't that contradict with the reasons why you're locking your children away? And then the audience get to choose and interpret that. We also don't really get a context from the filmmaker's perspective, or I was fascinated by what do the next door neighbours think?
Yeah,
you've got
these
so many questions, people running around this tiny apartment.
Look, maybe I did a bad interview, but when I spoke to the Crystal Moselle, I got lots of non-answers as well. Then, to be honest, I felt so. I'm not sure really what was going on. However, it's definitely worth seeing. Where's Wolfpack on?
Yeah, Cinema Nova in Carlton.
Look, really worth seeing.
Definitely.
I'm sure it'll come to a streaming service or something like that near you. And I really want to get in a moment to Holding the Man because it's a great Australian film. However, Strange Families. Stephen and St Kilda, what's yours?
The Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, yes. That is a golden Strange Family film. Who made that again?
Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson film, isn't it? Yes. Love it. Favourite character in that one, Stephen? Or favourite actor?
Gene Hackman was probably one of his best roles in that film.
It was, actually. Yeah, he was really good. Ewan's called from Box Hill. Ewan?
Raph, that documentary sounds like they watch Bad Boy Bubby.
I'm glad we haven't mentioned Bad Boy Bubby in a while. That's good.
It is a documentary I really want to see, and Bad Boy Bubby is one of the strangest families. That
definitely. Look, 100. I rephrase, and I want to take back what I said, because I did say Wolfpack was the strangest family I've ever seen on the screen. Certainly, Bad Boy Bubby takes the cake. Thank you very much for bringing it up. Matt's called from Macedon. Matt, what's yours?
Hi. Bad Boy Bubby's hard to beat, but yes. I put forward the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Is there a family in that?
Yeah, there is. Oh, right. There's a family that live out on the range and commit all of the horrible crimes.
Oh, you see, I have never seen it.
Well, check it out.
Yeah, well, maybe not, but thank you for the suggestion. And Ange is called from East St Kilda. Ange, go for it.
Oh, hi, Raph. Great Gardens.
Ooh, what's that?
That's the mother and daughter, a documentary made by the Maisels brothers. They're related to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. That's her distant relatives of hers who were living in this crumbling mansion.
Oh, they're the hoarders.
Yeah, total hoarders.
I've read
cats
about them.
And craziness.
Yes. And I think actually a lot of the significant psychiatric scholarship on hoarding is founded around those two sisters, that mother and sister, isn't it?
Mother and daughter.
Mother and daughter, sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, great, good. And I need to see that as well, because I've read about that, but I haven't seen it.
Fantastic documentary, that. Mid-70s, the Maisel brothers just released another one called Iris, about Iris Apfel during the Melbourne International Film Festival. But there was an adaptation of Grey Gardens made with Jessica Lange and Drew Barrymore as the mother and the daughter that was released about 10 years ago. And they're both really impressive. believe in it. But I love Grey Gardens. I think it's wonderful.
I read an extensive piece on hoarders, and clearly they are the ones that captured the imagination, because in the 70s. Capturing the Freedmans as well. Is that the one, that's the one about the father who molested the children, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Yeah, and I've never had the courage to see it.
It's pretty remarkable. Yeah. And the resounding thought from that is, why did you let the cameras keep going? In fact, the guy who directed Capturing the Freedmans has just released an HBO series called The Jinx, a film about Robert Durst.
Oh, it's the same guy.
The same guy. And you have the same feeling. Why are you saying these things in front of a camera?
Charged.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So he's got a good knack of drawing this stuff out of these people.
I've never had the courage to see Capturing the Freedmans because of the subject matter. But that's a text from Amos, who also texted to say all documentaries are essentially about strange families. Let's get a quick traffic check before we get into Holding the Man. Chris Miller joins us. Who's your wacky family film, Chris?
I must say the first thing that springs to mind, and it's actually one of my favourites, Little Miss Sunshine. Great movie.
Yes, yes, definitely. And definitely a weird family.
They're a bit out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Very strange.
On 774 ABC Melbourne, you're listening to Raphael Epstein.
Okay, look, I will get to more of your strange film families. However, I really want to talk about Holding the Man, a great film based on the life of two boys who went to Xavier here in Melbourne, fell in love, and then ran tragically into the HIV crisis in the gay community in the 1980s. Josh, before we hear a little bit of the grab, there's quite a lot to say when you describe this film, but give people an idea.
Yeah, there isn't. In some ways, the film is quite simple. It is a film about love and death between this guy, Timothy Congreve. You mentioned that it was based on his memoirs, which were then adapted for the stage by Tommy Murphy, and it's now been adapted to the screen and directed by Neil Armfield. And this is a film that has a theatrical element to it. It feels a little bit like a play, in a different way to say Last Cab to Darwin, which we talked about a couple of weeks ago. But at the core is this relationship spanning 15, 20 years between these two guys, played by Ryan Corr and Craig Stott. Two remarkable performances. And look, the film lives and dies by these central performances, because really that is the focus. I mean, there's lots of cameos and there's lots of character actors on the sort of the outskirts of this film.
Guy Pearce and Anthony LaPaglia is the dads. They're great.
Jeffrey Rush is a drama teacher. Yep. He's wonderful. Yep. But yeah, really it's about these two guys. And I think it's worth saying this is not a film about AIDS. I don't think it's not trying to politicize AIDS in the same way that's their film going back a while now, Philadelphia. Politicize AIDS.
It's not, and not like, what was that, Angels of America? It doesn't have that. That is the big bad event, but it's not about that.
Yeah, this is focused definitely on the micro scale of these two guys and this relationship, and the kind of the rises and falls, and how do you deal with again, it's a bit like Maggie, the imminence of death in a relationship.
Yeah.
That's why I think this film is quite a simple one, and it pulls it off. It's really powerful. And the power is drawn for me on the core relationship, and even some of the weaknesses I thought were in the film related to some of the scripting and some of the direction that felt a little bit too theatrical. Whenever it comes back to those two performances and those two guys on screen, it just draws you back in.
Magnetic, aren't they? So Ryan Corr and Craig Stott actually came in, how long ago? I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks ago. All right, we had a little chat to Ryan Corr and Craig Stott. Have a listen to some of what they told me.
I identify as queer, so for me there was kind of a... I mean, you draw on it in some ways, but it's a completely different experience. Everyone's experience of falling in love is different. But I think, I mean, in terms of pressure, I didn't necessarily feel any pressure to get it right. I've been asked that a lot because it's such a revered book. It's so respected.
And they're real people.
Yeah, exactly.
Real families.
Right. Yeah, and you have that in your mind, I guess, but what you're really trying to do is create a workable character as well. There are logistics to it. There are logistics to the craft. So what was great was we were able to talk to a lot of people who knew them, who were touched by them very, very deeply. And each of them gave us a different facet of their personality.
Yeah,
and
right.
We sort of amalgamated everything and made it into something that is sort of tangible, I guess.
That's Craig Stott talking to me. Ryan Corr was here as well. Holding the Man is the film. Is it going to make money, Josh? Because it's got all of... I was looking at it. Actually, Ryan Corr was in Love Child, which was that really sort of great period piece. Actually, it was a bit weak, sort of. But, it's a great period piece in many ways. It's got the music, got the clothes, got the set designs. It really looks like the phones. It's got the beautiful young love story. I love the gay society at Monash. It all feels like it's actually made there. However, it's about two gay men, and there's a fair bit of gay sex in it. So if it wasn't that, you'd think, yeah, sure, like, this would be a great Aussie mainstream film. I don't know, has it got the right ingredients to be a big box office success? Because I would like it to be.
Yeah, I'd like it to be too. And for those reasons you mentioned, I'm not sure it necessarily will find as broad an audience as it has. Perhaps we need the New South Wales Premier and the Minister for Education Premier to get on and say we're going to ban this film because it's homosexual propaganda. And then suddenly you spark an audience. Maybe, I kind of like this film doesn't court controversy. It's not marketing itself as a film about, you know, the gay culture and gay sex. It's not, you know, it's all about the romantic interest. Even the poster itself is, you know, you could, you know, interchange those two characters for a heterosexual couple. In fact, the story doesn't feel like it's trying to overemphasize gay culture.
Is it a good film, do you think?
Look, I think it is a good film, and I think it's two remarkably strong performances at its core. And, you know, it works. It doesn't feel like it's trying to deliberately manipulate the audience emotionally, dealing with something as a number of times throughout it. You know, it was just a genuine, it felt genuine and honest, and I think that's what most people look for with any real drama.
Yeah, well, that's why I really wanted to succeed, because quite beyond, it's Melbourne, it's Australian, etc., blah, blah, blah. Like, it deeply moved me. Like, when they're falling in love young, you're really thinking, oh, right, yeah, I remember what it's like. Yeah, first kiss, first relationship at school. And then you think, oh, right, must have been hard, two blokes, wow, Xavier. And then it's actually quite subtle the way, it's really interesting. They've got friends who are relentlessly teasing Ryan Corr about being gay, but clearly they really like him.
There's a tenderness
there. And he's kind of okay about it. So it's a really quite a subtle portrayal of what it, you know, I guess just a real world friendship and relationship. I'm just not sure if, I know, people don't seem to like Australian films.
That sequence in the mid-70s when they're getting together as high school students, I thought was remarkable. And I can't think of another film where we've had two older actors playing younger versions of themselves that well. Like, they nail it. Was
they
totally
do,
like,
don't they?
It was like this nostalgic flashback. Yeah. That's me. That's kind of what I went through, you know, in a similar way.
Well, that was one thing that I didn't bring up with them, because it's really hard to play the 18-year-old version of when you're, I don't know how old they are, late 20s, early 30s, but they're playing 17-year-old versions of themselves just with school uniforms. And I know, I thought
and a
that
wig.
Was...
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, I said to Craig Stott, nice wig, and he went, that wasn't a wig.
Really?
I wasn't sure if he was joking, because it looks like a wig.
It does look like a wig.
And look, just on Strange Families, I want to give Finn a chance in Ararat. Your Strange Family, Finn.
The Skywalkers.
Right now, I can... That's very good, because I would not have thought of that. So they are a pretty weird family. Yeah, that's up there. Across all six films or just three?
Good question.
Yeah, okay. I like that, Finn. That's very entertaining.
Nine films soon to be, is it? Is it are they going to do another trilogy?
Yeah, I think it is. No, well, it's more, because there's a spin-off.
Of course.
There's there's the three sequels, and then there's the spin-off series as well. They're going to bring, I mean, it's one every year now, Star Wars.
Skywalker saga continues.
It's just going to continue. Saw it at the film festival. Fantastic film. Just a great story, and it will do very well overseas. That's someone's verdict. And someone else saying Holding the Man sounds as powerful as The Normal Heart, which I didn't see, but Mark Ruffalo and Julia Roberts. Beautiful. Holding the Man on a bit more broadly, isn't it?
It is, yes, indeed, which is
Multiplex.
Good, which is a good thing. A few of them, yeah.
Go out, see it if you want to see more Australian films.
Also see Last Cab to Darwin, because
totally.
Session times are dropping off, and I think it's a really great film.
Look, they're both good films. They're both adapted from plays. They know what they're doing. They've refined the story. They're both really good. If you need a good film on the weekend, Last Cab to Darwin and Holding the Man, which is the film we spoke about. We also spoke about Wolfpack, which is good, but only on at the Nova. It's weird. Josh, thank you.
Pleasure.